Okay, we're live. We're broadcasting to probably about at least 60 or 70 people. It might be more. We'll see tonight, but there's a lot more people tuning in. So I've had a couple boys who have been working here 2 weeks to get this place in top-notch shape for the royalty that's here. And it gives me an excuse for them to get my house looking better, too. So, but they've been working hard, and we're glad you're here. Okay. I'll try to project my voice more. So we're going to be talking about many of the same things that we've been talking about when we were with everyone in May, but we're going to be talking about it in a different way, because every time we talk about who we are with a different twist, it loosens the shackles of unbelief, and that was one of the lessons in May. And we're talking about taking on the stubborn illusion, which Einstein talked about, which said that it was very vast and stands in the way of our reward. So the title of the theme of the weekend is The Consciousness of Separation. And that doesn't sound real encouraging on the surface, but when we're done, I believe that you all will understand what we're talking about. And tonight, the title of the lesson is The Cause of Separation. And saying that we're love is easy to do. It's just a word, though, and we need to understand what that means. So I'd like you to understand the meaning and the importance of the consciousness of the individual. And Joel and Lanyon talk about this a lot. Most of us have spent our whole life studying and learning all about God. And most of you have had emotional experiences that you can testify to that we call salvation experiences. But in reality, all that we've learned and experienced will not do us any good. I'm not saying it's not necessary, but it won't do us any good for one reason. Unless you can understand that all that you're learning about God is the truth about your consciousness. For God, who is love, constitutes your consciousness. So our definition of God is part of the problem, because when you say God, we have a tendency, and of course have been taught all our lives, that it's a God of reward and punishment. And you have a sense of that that sort of follows you around. There's always a sense when things go bad, something's wrong, and we're happy about when things go good. And it's really the good side of the wrong tree that trips us up, because when we move in that understanding, it means there's something we're thinking in our lives that needs corrected. If we need some more good in our lives, or we only see the good, usually those are the religious minds that are saying something's wrong in the world. And we need to move beyond that. And the way we can do that is first to understand who we are. So the history we've had with our God, or this faith in God, is all very well in its place, and it's done a good job in your quest for good. But at the best, we've only created a religion. And I hope this thing, oh, here we got some more here, excuse me. It's only created a religion of separation. And you're left with you, and this is what's important, and we talked about in May. When we're in this understanding, we're left with you, and a God that's out there. He feels remote to us. It's like he's out for a beer and a sandwich. God, don't you know what's wrong? Don't you see what's wrong? Don't you understand what's wrong? And we've been praying to this God who's remote from us about all of our difficulties. So our personal concept of God doesn't do us any good. This is part of the difficulty. So here's where, to me, the rubber hits the road, and it explains it a little more in detail. That while God is a word in your mind, there's no use of praying, because you can't get an answer. Because you can't get an answer from a word in your mind. A word which represents a concept of God. And even if you turn God into life or love, it still won't do us any good, because it will not be yourself that you're thinking of. So we have separation. It will still be something up in your mind about what you're entertaining a concept of. And if you were asked to write a paper, if I had everybody ask, write a paper about what is God or what is love, we would find that we'd probably get just as many different concepts of God as we have people. And that would mean that we don't know God at all. Because God is one. God is love. So we can say God is love. And again, as long as it's a word love in your mind, you're left with an ego to support your understanding of love. And the last thing that love is an ego or a personality or an emotion. Now we get emotional and we want to care, we want to be compassionate, right? But what do we want to be compassionate towards? Something that we're seeing out of order. This person's having this difficulty, or we're having this difficulty. And all these things trip us up and steal our reward away. So love does not make us free. It's the truth about love that makes us free. And without it, love is just another word. And we want to know more about that. So now, if we don't realize God or love, I'd really like to just say love, but even if we just use the word love, our understanding of that word even isn't really correct. Because it, again, it's not an emotion. It's not just a word. So we have to understand that love is what constitutes our being. It's not a God. Really, God's the wrong word. Love constitutes our being. And love never controls. It's never trying to control anything or change anything. So, if you do not realize God is your being, which constitutes your being, the essence, the life, the substance of your being, you're going to have duality. And that is, you are bound up in the fact of a God and a you, instead of having God manifested as you. So the difference between failure and success lies in the two words, and or as. Just those two little words, and or as. If there's a you conceiving God, thinking of God, hoping for God, searching for God, there's duality and failure, because there's separation. But the moment there's the realization of I am that I am, not I will be, not I long to be, hope to be, I would like to be worthy of, not at all. I am that I am love. So what we brought up from within you, love incarnate, this now becomes our experience. And we're going to talk about that in detail. We've got to make it more than a word. It's got to become much more than a word. And it's got to be something that's different than your definition of what love is, because our definition of God and love aren't correct. We've been taught all our lives the wrong definition of these terms. All that I am is thine. Because we're not two, we're one. Now, Abraham struggled with this. Here's God talking to him, and you know, God could have manifested himself there. That's not the point. The point is God said to Abraham within his innermost being, I am your reward. And he couldn't get his mind off the fact that he didn't have a son. So all that I am is who I am, not what I think I need. So oneness is a fact, whether we know it or not. But it's only in the realization of oneness that you can understand that wanting something or someone external to yourself is where our failure lies. So as long as there's want or desire, there's a sense of separation. That is why within the context of this lesson, today we have to find that desire is at the very heart of sin. Now, stay within the context now of what we're talking about. I'm not talking about getting a car or getting a house or you like red or you like green. I mean, we got to rise above that kind of stuff, okay? Those things aren't important in the context of what we're talking about. I don't care what kind of car you drive or where you live. It's not what we're talking about. So, but this desire that there's something missing, that there's something more that we need, automatically pushes us where? Out into the future. And we're not really at rest. We're not centered in this all that there is. I am all. God the Father has manifest as God the Son, but still just one. Even saying that sounds like there's two, right? God the Father is God the Son. And until you can see that, until you can see that I, God, am expressing myself as you, you will live a life of want with the feeling of helplessness, duality, and failure. And you can say, well, I've had a lot of victory, and boy, I really understand this. But then with your tongue, we're speaking lies of separation. And it's very subtle. It can creep in many, many ways. And it's so subtle, that's why it's called in Scripture a vast gulf. It's called something that no man can cross over. And no man, it says, we'll ever see God. When you think you're a man, as long as you think you're a man, you can't see what I'm talking about because there's separation there. So you're not a man. You're not a human being. You are God manifest as love. That's the soul of every man. And so we want to come in line with that so we can be sensitive to what that is. So when our tongue begins to speak what's contrary to that concept, we say, wait a minute, Peter, you're for the things of man, not for the things of God. And we have to be humble and realize that who you think you are is your enemy. Your concept of yourself is your enemy. Who you really are has none. So this concept, this idea of who you think you are, the ego, the personality, that thing does not want to die, folks. I'm telling you, it still talks to me. I'm learning what I'm teaching you. This is new. It's fresh. We've talked about it in generalities, but I'm learning this stuff as I teach it to you. I had to go back and listen to the lessons in May because I'm confident the word does not come from me. Because when I hear it, I'm saying, man, that's really good. Well, what does that mean? I don't know it. If I'm hearing it and it's really good, it means I didn't know it. And so I say, Father, teach me your ways. Because there's a lot of confusion, there's a lot of talk, there's a lot of chatter about all the things going on around us. And there's a way of life that's beyond the appearances, and that's what we're here to discover. So, desire, it's a big word. Desire is at the very heart of sin. If I desire integrity, isn't it acknowledging that I haven't it? If I desire companionship, isn't it acknowledging that I don't have it? And all this is sin. And so it is that even if I desire God, it's an acknowledgement that I don't have it. Because that desire causes us to look and seek and try to find something, and it's all in here. It's like, I remember Tony telling the story of a guy that was sitting on a box his whole life, and he had inherited it or something, and he didn't have any money. And one day he just decided to open it up, and it was, you know, thousands of dollars in there. And he'd been sitting on it for years. And here he was, a rich man, and didn't even know it. And that's what we are when we seek something outside of ourselves. That's what we are. And we want to become sensitive to what stands in our way. Now tomorrow, this message tonight is going to be all lovey and fluffy and really good. And tomorrow we're going to have a message that's not going to be fun for a lot of us. Because we're going to talk about the culprit of it and one of the big roadblocks of it. But we need it. You're going to be surprised at even some of the scripture that supports this. When you get the premise right, it's actually quite amazing. So desiring God is acknowledging we don't have God. And our concept of God, really, just with that word, is always something that controls or something that wants you to do more. And that's, again, that's just an understanding we have that we need to start using different words. But if I just say love, love, love all the time, why people on Facebook say, well, you guys are just saying love, love, love all the time. You know, because it doesn't mean anything to them. And it doesn't mean anything to the listener. It's just a word. So it has to be more than a word. The Father and you are one. All that the Father has is mine. And as I abide in that word, and that word abides in me, I have no desires. Now think about the word desire again as something future. Okay? You could say, I have no desire for tomorrow. Maybe that'll help you a little bit. We can only live, I'm only living in this moment. Conscious of the fact that whatever I need for life and godliness is complete and abides within me. So what I need an hour from now, or tomorrow, or next year, is no longer my concern. Because when we move into that state of consciousness, we begin to lose our demonstration. And when we do not abide in the vine, we are then subject to what is described in Scripture as a bottomless pit. Now, there's one characteristic about a bottomless pit that should be real clear. It can never be satisfied, can never be filled. And Proverbs, Solomon spoke of it real clearly when he said, hell and destruction are never full because the eyes of man are never satisfied. It's the same thing as a bottomless pit. It can never be satisfied. There's never enough. There's always something more that we want. So when you find you have a meat that the world knows not of, And all we have to do is be patient and live in this very moment and feel assured that all the Father hath is embodied within you. And it's unfolding every moment in accord with what is needed for that moment. Now, I struggle with this myself. I still struggle with it when I go into my business and the checking account's going up and down. You've heard me talk about it, up and down. And we're dealing with millions of dollars up there. And I got nervous when it started to take a big dip this summer. And a couple customers that we extended some credit to all of a sudden said, well, they couldn't pay us. They still haven't paid us. I think it's about $1.4 million right now in outstanding receivables beyond 90 days. So the bank comes in and cuts you off because they will only give us credit on the receivable for 90 days, and they still haven't paid it. And the father said to me, well, what would you be comfortable with? Could you trust me for $1,000? Well, yeah. How about $10,000? Yeah. We get closer to $1 million, it gets a little harder. Right? And he said to me, well, don't you just whack all the zeros off of it? Because they're just zeros to me. They're just all zeros. I said, well, that sounds pretty good. And I can tell you today, when we started this business, I really sort of had control over everything. I was the purchasing guy. I was the sales guy. I was all of it, you know. And it was all, you know, sort of contained where I could keep an eye on all of it all the time, you know. Well, back then, we just had 1.5 employees. Now I've got 60. And we love these kids. We want them to have jobs. And so that's probably more of my biggest fears. I want to be their supply. And so that's where some of the struggle comes in. But I've got to go in every week and go in there and saw those zeros off that financial statement, you know. And, of course, some other businesses have increased. I mean, it's just like this all the time, guys. It's just a friggin' yo-yo. And I mean, I need to get adjustments because of it, you know. So my neck gets out of whack, you know, because of it all. But I'm not saying I'm innocent of being pulled in by this stuff, you know. That's what I'm trying to tell you. It's pushed me in to understanding this consciousness at a higher level. One thing I can say is I'm not afraid. I'm not in fear. And that's quite a victory.
Yes.
Because I haven't experienced it at that level with all the zeros on it yet. You know, I mean, that's... And so he says, well, I can handle it. And even though the checking account is hovering down below my comfort zone, right? All of it's flowing in and we're paying our bills and everybody's getting their paychecks. And I'd still like to be a little higher, but that's my problem. Right? So where is it in your life you want something to be a little higher, you want something more, right? Here's the crux of the problem, is we then, you leave your kingdom, right? So people talk about these experiences, well, excuse me, I was in hell and I went through this and, you know, that was done. Well, hell isn't like that. Hell is a place where you're not satisfied. And it can happen at the drop of a hat. You can be going along and everything's fine. You're laying in a bed of flowers and somebody shows up with your dinner and you got your feet propped up and say, boy, this is heaven. You know, boom, you get knocked off your feet. And they're both heaven if you realize the difference between the language of man and the language of the Father. Just say, wait a minute now. I know you. I'm not going to believe you. Am I going to live in a place where I'm satisfied with little or with much or in want or in need or in bad health or good health? Health's a big issue. The God of health's big. He's a big God. But he's not real. He's fake. So we have this meat that the world knows not of. It's a supply that never ends. It's sort of like a freezer that's going to hit a button and it's going to give you what you need at that moment. But God's the freezer, right? Love God, your love is the freezer. He is your supply. And we really can't be the supply for others. You really can't. You're your own supply. I mean, if you've got all things for life and godliness, you can't really get more than that. All should be enough, I think. So is it enough? That's what you got to ask yourself. So as we're patient and live in this very moment, we feel assured that all that the Father has is embodied within me and is unfolding in that moment, which is the only time you can experience all, right? In that moment. And so when turmoil comes towards you and troubles come towards you, it's really a call for silence. Waiting. And I say all the time, I say, Father, what the heck's my problem? Now, when I'm saying that, I'm in hell. Right? What's my problem? He says, well, it's your judgment. It's a broken record. That's what he keeps saying to me. What's your problem? It's your job. I got it down now. I got that one down. So, I said, I think it was the second lesson last time, that I don't believe in God. And there was some moaning going on. I heard it clear from Australia. But they're still listening. They're probably listening now. Hello out there, Australia. So I don't believe in a God that does things for me. He doesn't work for me like an employee. This is why I've stopped all the needless praying for a God to do something in this world. Now, what is this world? We're going to talk about that more later. What's your world, actually? Because we all create our own world, right? So I want to talk about how desire separates us. And again, this is a more intimate, I think this is one of the best descriptions Jesus gave of our oneness. He says, I am the vine, you are the branch. Unless you abide in me and I abide in you, you stand alone. You abide alone. And so there's many conversations that go on between the serpent, where you have the desire of man versus the consciousness of the vine. People talk about being on a journey, and I don't deny people who are on a journey. But if you're on a journey, you must realize that you're living in separation. When you're on a journey, you have something you're looking for. And you have a God out there again, and you talk to about your desires, but none of it's reality. Why? Because desire, as we said, pushes us out of the moment, out into the future. The devil's sensitive. I'm going to show him to you tomorrow. He loves to be told that he's love. He loves to be told that he's the Son of God. He loves to be told that he's all these things. But the vacuum of his personality just sucks all that in. But normally there's some problem somewhere. So we're living with vacuums in our lives. We've got financial vacuums, health vacuums, and all of it's coming from a realm of judgment. We haven't really been still long enough to even hear enough truth about who we are to escape the simplest things of just supply. That's why Jesus said, take no thought for your life. He said, oh my gosh, what you're going to eat or what you're going to put on? Come on, guys. Can we rise above these simple things? And yet those are the things people talk about all the time. Where will our next meal come from? How am I going to pay the bills this month? Now you say those things, say, now come on, quit judging me. No, I don't want to judge you. I'm just telling you it's killing you. That's what I'll tell you. It's stealing away your reward. Now, if you say those things, then you say, now wait a minute, what am I doing? Can we become conscious of what our tongue says? Sometimes it's mindless even. It's just by habit even, because there's so much of it going on around us. So we have a group of health nuts, right? These are the branches. They hang out together. And they're skinny. They don't have as many leaves as the heavier branches do, right? But they're barking at the fatter branches, you know. Oh, they're not healthy, right? You got your other branches. They're always talking about money because their lack speaks continuously. Always wanting more, never satisfied, and never understanding that they are the vine. You look at a tree, you don't say, well, the branch isn't part of the tree. Do we do that? You'd go up and say, well, that's a really nice branch up there. I mean, you might. You stand back and say, that's a nice tree. Well, what is that tree? It's the tree of life, right? There's nothing lacking in that tree. You are the vine. You are the vine. The branch and the vine aren't separate. You look at the tree, here's the vine, here's the branches. It's the tree of life. Where is it separated at? Now, we're going to talk about that tomorrow. We're going to talk about somebody who's got a saw, right? But where, when that branch connects to the vine, where is it connected? Is it down here, up here? I mean, it's all one vine. It's one tree, and it's called the tree of life. So a consciousness of separation sees out at the end of the branches, there's war going on. You know, they're fighting and bickering, you know, talking about the other vines, you know, and what we need and what we don't have. So now we're going to dip into a little bit more of what we're going to talk about tomorrow. So the branch is not separate from the vine, okay? Is everybody with me? It's not separate. We don't understand that because your devil, yes, your devil, has a very sharp saw. And he loves with all his lack of understanding and all the death language that comes off the tip of his tongue to get out his saw and start cutting himself off the vine. And that's what we do when separation, when our tongue speaks things of judgment about lack, about what's going on in the world. It's a big thing. You know, it's hard to watch the news. Having Gary in my life has been good. He's been pushing me, and he pushed me into Facebook. He says, what do you got to lose, you know? What do you got to lose? Why not? And it's actually been quite wonderful. And there's some people that get on there and they say amen and hallelujah, you know, and that's all good. And then I sort of find they sort of disappeared. So I'll go in and snoop. That's the one thing I like about Facebook. I can go and snoop on their wall and I can see what's going on. Now, I'm not calling them out. I'm not going to say any names, okay? I mean, there was someone we're talking about all the problems with the government. Government needs to do this, the government needs to do that, and it's just corrupt and just on and on and on and on and on. And do you know that in the kingdom, nothing is out of order? Except in your world that you create. So this, all the activities in the world, that's more like a chainsaw instead of a little tree saw, right? And it's usually running all the time. It's usually nonstop, 24/7, because it's a spirit of judgment. And I mean, if you got to turn off the news, guys, turn it off. Really, that's what you got to do. Just turn it off. We don't need to help the world out there. Whatever help you need in your world is your world. It's not somebody else's. It's your world. And if it's out of order, then you'll be judging it. Lions devour each other. That's what they do. That's what they're supposed to do. And the street's full of them. God has come out where he can be seen, in the branches. There's no separation there. And that's why I love that analogy Jesus used, because a lot of other, some of the analogies, is talking about two people. And the vine's not separate in any way. We're the only ones that cut ourselves off. And thank God we can graft ourselves back in the moment we start moving into our right mind. And this is what happened with Legion. He's a picture of the thousands of thoughts and judgments that we've had. I said he was tormented so much he was in the cave cutting himself. And what did it say at the end of the whole story? He was found in his right mind and at peace. An understanding of who he was. So, God has come out where he can be seen, but never as an individual. We're not separate manifestations. Even those words have a sense of separation again. Do you see what I mean? We're not individuals. We can be seen, but it's God who's being seen. It's love who's being seen. And that makes us all one. Right now, in this moment, you're as much of the vine as you can be. You can't be any more the vine than you are. The branch is the vine, and the vine the branch. Extend it out so love might be more visible to those who've cut themselves off, to those who worship their own ego, defend their individualism, defend their decisions. Oh, hi, I'm a branch. I remember when I made a decision to connect myself to the vine in Vacation Bible School. But you didn't realize you had to cut yourself off so you could see it happening. Well, God needs me, you know. I mean, I was in Vacation Bible School every summer, and I had to run down the aisle because they talked about hell so much, and I didn't want to go there. So I said, well, I might as well catch up, you know. But we, in the religion I grew up in, they taught you could fart and lose it. And I did that. So that's why I kept going up there all the time, you know. I said, well, hopefully he catches me in between when I go up and before I fart again, right? Or whatever it is, smoke. My mom always said, if you smoke, you're going to hell. So we've had a lot of experiences. So our religious experiences we had, where you thought you began to understand God, was just that you went from the evil side of the wrong tree to the good side of the wrong tree. And that becomes part of the greater illusion. That's why it becomes stubborn. Why don't we want to be good? Well, it's a different good we're talking about. It's, again, it's not the good we grew up with. Of course, we don't want to be mean. We don't want to be unkind. Of course we don't. So I'm going to turn up the heat a little bit. And my intention isn't to judge. My intention is to help loosen up some of the barnacles that are on the bottom of our ship a little more. We think we're somebody, and we look back at our experience as our salvation. and it's not true. It was probably the beginning of your journey, and I'm not saying it's not necessary. It's obviously necessary. But we'll never come out it until we understand truth. If you want to brag about your journey through hell and destruction, I'm sure you're going to find a lot of people that will sit in a circle and can't wait for you to shut up so they can talk about theirs. And I was in it once. I talked about my suffering, and this one guy over there was just sitting on his hands, and he couldn't wait till I shut up. And he went on, and man, he suffered 10 times more than me. And I said, well, you win, you know? I mean, it was got real competitive, you know? I said, well, you win, you know? And we were right back to nothing, weren't we? He won, and then nobody talked anymore. You know, I gave up. Love continually gives, continually lays down its concept of life. It becomes a life that's desireless. Now, you can give out of a well that's never ending. This is the story of the woman who had one drop in her pot, one drop of oil. It just kept appearing and appearing. And I'd like to give you some rope, but I can't, okay? It's that rope that we want. Well, can you give me 10 minutes, God, you know, of life? Or a year, you know, to understand this? Can you give me a year to, you know, seek my things? And then maybe I'll be satisfied. But it always changes. There's always something more. So, understanding I no longer desire a specific thing, begin to realize I am complete in my own understanding. In the spiritual life, which is God or love itself, I begin to move out of the separation of consciousness and into the infinite laws of life and fulfillment. Now, if you're walking around content and fulfilled and desireless, it's really easy to share without conditions, without any kind of restrictions. And I mean, if you're in, you know, again, I got to admit, you know, do I walk in this every second of the day? No. I know the difference. And I'm feeling a sense that, to me, being a successful believer in this means that there's no fear in my life. And Gary helped us with this back when he was with us before, just understanding that everything that comes to us is for our reward. It's for us, not against us. Now, I've taught on sovereignty, and I used to be hyper-Calvinist, and I believed in sovereignty, and then we taught everything in was order. But, I mean, hell was supposed to be in order, and it was certainly out of order. But you had to, I believed in a God of good and evil, right? Didn't understand the passages correctly, and I was a hyper-Calvinist. And the thing that helped me is I got the revelation that there was no hell where people were burning like a piece of bacon. Because, I mean, we were teaching double predestination in Bible school. I said, whoa. Well, who are you? You know? The only moment in which we can live is in this moment in which we are living. And so the question comes to mind, what is it that you want? So that's the question. What do you want? Can you say you don't want anything? Can you say you're satisfied? Because if we can't, we lose our reward, don't we? We move out of the moment. And like I said, I'd like to give you 10 seconds, but it doesn't work that way. We taught pretty extensively on the fact that man is drowning in the ocean of time. That the concept of time and fear are twins. And so I can't say I'm never afraid of anything. I give you some good examples. And I can't say that it doesn't nip at my heels. But I'm much more sensitive to it spiritually now to not let it take me away as long. See, I say, okay, I'm not going to follow you this time. You know, get behind me. And I've been forced into it with my work situation. One of my most brilliant minds that's working with me, young guy, sharp as a tack, and could replace me as CEO one day. And I even talked to him about it. I just love the guy. He knows I love him. He loves me. And he came in a couple weeks ago and said he's leaving. And I said, wow, man, I can't do this without you. You know, and he knows that. And here we go again. What did I do? I started wandering away from the barn. I said, what am I going to do? You know, I need this guy. He's 27. And he was selling wood stoves when I met him. And he speaks to rooms full of engineers now and sounds like he's been doing it 30 years. That's how sharp he is. He can speak better than I do to people who are very picky and think they know everything. You know, you get in a room with a bunch of engineers, they usually are barking you down and telling you where you're wrong and right. And I mean, he had him in the palm of his hand. Diane and I were there even. It's just unbelievable, his presentation, everything he did. Well, I need the guy. And he's leaving. So he came in and he said, and he's going to work something out with us to work with us on a part-time basis and consult us and still work with me. So that's good. Now, of course, I want more, right? That's not enough. See, there's a good example, right? I want all of them. I don't want just a piece of them. But I have to realize that that's my reward. It's good for me. It's good for me. And I've got to see the end from the beginning and realize it's going to be what it's supposed to be. We can't be separated from the life of God or the love of God. So you come to know eventually that the only moment that counts is this minute. It should be this second, really. I'll give you 60 seconds, okay? In this minute, I am alive, fully alive. And in this minute in which I am aware of God, I'm at peace, aware of love, aware that all that I am is who you are. And we've got to leave the appearances alone. Jesus said, judge not by appearances, but judge righteous judgment. He didn't say, don't judge by some of the appearances. This is where we get pulled away, is they come in and they trip us up. So we can't be separated from this love. In this minute, outside of a concept of passing time, is where you're going to realize that you're infinite, that you're immortal. And it's only in this moment that life is eternal, and life is immortal, and life's abundant. And so Jesus, the Master, I like calling him the Master, because he was the Master of life. And if you think he was a master of life all the time, you don't know the Jesus I know. Because he said he was made like unto his brethren in every respect. That means everything you've ever experienced, he experienced it. He didn't just pass it by and wave at it and said, well, I'm blessed God, I'm the son of God, that won't get me. Because it got him. He said, I've come that you might have life, and that you might have it more abundantly. And this I is the I that I am. This I in the midst of me is here for the specific purpose of living my life and living it abundantly. And as long as I can realize that God is that I that is within me, or that I that was it within me is the very Christ of God, the very offspring heir, one with God, then I can live this minute abundantly. And who can live any other minute abundantly but this minute? You can't live yesterday abundantly. You can't live tomorrow abundantly. Only in this minute can you live abundantly, and only by virtue of this I that you are. Now, it's I again is just a word. So we've got to become intimate with that word. And tomorrow you're going to find out something else you've got to be intimate with so that you can know the I. And I believe, as you know, as long as we're going along with this lesson, it'll make a lot of sense to you. But he said, I've come that you might have life and have it more abundantly. When we read this verse, we interpret the word abundantly incorrectly because we define the word as fulfilling something we need or desire, and that's not what it's talking about. But since you can only experience life but within the moment, it must mean something much more. It has to mean that abundant life that is the actual life of the Father within. Without any conditions. Unconditional. You've got to realize it's unconditional. It doesn't help you any. If you don't realize, that has to be unconditional. There can't be a but or an I or an adder or, wait a minute, Mike, I've got this question and this happened to me. It's got to be silence. It said in Revelation there was silence in heaven for a half hour. That doesn't seem like very long. This can only be realized in the silence. It can't be realized in the fulfillment of something specific that you got. Because even if you get the thing you got, you know, we've all been around a while. We've been around the horn a little bit here. Something more comes up. It's always something. As Gilda Radner used to say, she didn't know she was preaching. Saturday Night Live. It's always something. Well, that something is killing you. What is it? So again, ask yourself. Don't ask your neighbor. Ask yourself. What is that something? What is it? It has to mean who you are, the Father within. It can only be known in a realm beyond desire and beyond time. You have all things for life and godliness, and you can only have all of it within the presence of this understanding. So that's why we want to really focus in on that. So what am I? I am that I that's eternal life, and there's nothing else to obtain but that consciousness. Everything else creates a separation of consciousness. Excuse me, I get my tongue wrapped around it. You can't add anything. There's no adder to that. We can't add anything to this abundant life that's within us. Out of that, your supply is met the next second. We're going to take it from a minute down to a second. Everything you need is within you, and it's not conditioned. It's unconditional to appearances. That's unconditional love. It's always satisfied with where it's at. So this I within me is the son of love, heir of love, joint heir. So much so that if you see us me, you see us the Father that sent me. For I am that which sent me. And Jesus said that, and that's our reward. And I and the Father is that invisible area of me which has manifested itself as I, Mike. And I, Mike, then I have all that this invisible has. because I'm heir to that. I'm heir to all of it. It's been planted in the midst of me that I may have life and that I might have it more abundantly. But you see what happens the minute you think of the word God or divine mind or divine love. You're putting them off again somewhere, separate and apart from who you are. God has manifested himself as the eye of my being. And planted in the midst of that understanding is my abundance, my allness, my immortality. So by reason of that, when we understand the heart of God is pure love, one that judges no man, Tony had asked me to start this ministry, and I was really busy. I think this is our fifth year now. And he came to me and said, you know, you need to start a fellowship here. And we'd been inviting him over. And I was just content to sit and learn. I mean, so much of what I was learning was so new. I was just very satisfied just to sit and just take it in. And so a year went by. He came back the next year and asked me. And I think another year went by. And so finally I said, well, I got nothing. I got nothing. And that was probably good. You know, I said I didn't have anything. Because the next week we got the revelation of righteous judgment. And that's how this ministry started. And so when Jesus said, judge not by appearances, but judge righteous judgment, I started doing an expanded study of those words throughout Scripture. And I went into Psalms, and it said, God is judging the world in righteousness and the people with equity. He's judging the world in righteousness and the people uprightly and with loving kindness. And I'm going, whoa, that's not the world I see. But he doesn't see what we see. What does he see? He can only see himself because he doesn't live in a time zone. That's a wonderful truth, that everyone out there is seen in righteousness. Now, what do we see? There's the question again. Here's your victory, is ask yourself, what am I seeing? What am I seeing that's out of order? It's pretty hard to be out in the world and not be of it. And we'll say, well, I'm not of the world. But you are when you have a world that's out of order. And it's your world, and everybody's description's different. We've all got a different world. And so Jesus said, I'm going to leave my world now and go to my Father. And he didn't have to get up out of his chair. He didn't have to go do something. He didn't have to go save the starving people in Africa. Now, I don't like all of that stuff, but you've got to realize in the kingdom of hell and destruction, that's the way it's supposed to be. You can't change that. The only thing the world needs saved from is our judgment of it. That's what it needs saved from. All of it. The government, all the mayhem we see. I mean, I'm convinced, and I'm being a little funny now, that God snatched that plane on Malaysia Airlines right out of the sky. I mean, I don't really mean that, but just go with me a little bit, okay? They can't find a trace of it. How can you not find a trace of a 777 Boeing? Not a scrap. Nobody on that plane's lost, folks. I'm telling you right now. There wasn't one soul on that plane lost. And I have to rest in that. Now, there's 1,000 things that try to tell me that's not true. But I'm not buying into it anymore, okay? And I'm not going to be frustrated by it. You still can have compassion, but there's nothing you can do about it except stop judging it. And that's the beginning of your victory, where your world then becomes a world where you're extending peace and love to those around you. And that's where you have to start. Your world is that's around you. Okay? So, by reason of understanding the heart of God is pure love that judges no man for anything. That's hard to swallow. For anything? Yep. Judges no man for anything. He doesn't see man. He doesn't see that thing that he didn't create. I didn't create that. That's your doing. So what does this mean? If you go with me a little bit and realize there's no such thing as passing time. Einstein said this. It's so beautiful, it gives me goosebumps. The distinction between the past, present, and future does not exist. What does that mean? If this is true of us, it has to be true about everyone on the face of the globe. Right now. It has to be true. Now, what's that called? Faith? It's called faith. If nothing's out of order, it has to be in your world. It has to be your world that nothing's out of order. And if something's out of order in your world, it's going to eat your lunch. I'm here to tell you. I'm a witness. It eats my lunch. And to say you're going to just, all of a sudden, you're never going to go there again is just not true. Because as soon as you say that, you're in deception again. Because I'm telling you, it follows you around. And I'll tell you what, before these meetings, it's been noisy. The lions are roaring. I mean, they're hungry. I'm just telling you. And it always happens. And the noisier it is, the more excited I get. Because I know there's going to be a big shift in consciousness with this group and those of us who are listening. So it sort of gets me excited now about it. And I'm not going to tell you about all the things, okay? I just told you about a couple. There's a list of 10. We've got a $20,000 server room. Half hour before I left to come to this meeting, the air conditioner quit working. And I'm the only one in the building. So I'm down there sweating, dragging fans over there. I can't get anybody on the phone, and I know I don't have a lot of time. And I'm smiling. I said, well, God, this is for me. So I called my brother from Hillsdale. He's run over there. He says, well, Mike, it hasn't sent me a beep, so at least it's not burning up. Because we got like 50 computers in this room, and they put out a lot of heat, right? And so I just started smiling because it happened right before. I said, boy, you got to have some good stuff for us tonight, Father. I know you're going to unload on us. I'm all excited, you know. But love's no respecter of persons. There's neither Jew nor Greek. There's neither white nor black, for we are all one. And that makes us one family called the sons of love. That's a good name for yourself. Not a human being, right? Got some cause, you're marching, got a temperance march, you know. Had some guy tell me, he says, well, I remember one day I was an alcoholic, and I just give up, and I threw it up in the air, and the next day I wasn't an alcoholic anymore, and I got saved. And I said, well, we've all had experiences, and I'm not saying those experiences aren't good. But as you go from little children to young men to fatherhood, those experiences don't mean so much anymore. Because salvation is to know Him. To know Him is life eternal, not having an experience. And those are part of our journey. Where? In hell and destruction. And it's necessary. I'm not saying it's not necessary. How about another word? Branches of the vine. Make that into a lodge or something. Branches of the vine. You know, we get together and have beer. That's what we are. Branches of the vine. Not separate from the vine. So all should be enough. So I want to talk just a little bit about tomorrow. I've got just a couple more comments. So all should be enough. So what I'm telling you today is be careful that you do not boast about what you know, because your tongue will call you out. What are we going to be talking about tomorrow? Are you going to be still and know who you are? Are you going to be talking about some need or the war in Syria or stuff that's going on in the world? Start listening to your tongue. Don't condemn yourself from it. Just recognize it. If you do it, then you won't have to worry about somebody come up, tap you on the shoulder. Mike, you know, you're yapping away about nothing, you know. Do you like it in hell and destruction? Is that what you like? No, I wouldn't mind if somebody did that to me, but I have to tap myself on the shoulder all the time. There is sort of like two little people up there, you know. Mike's yapping away, and this guy over here says, shut the hell up, Nevins. In hell. You know, what you talking about? I said, boy, you're right, you know. So tomorrow we're going to talk about what stands in the way of our victory. And something we need to be very intimate with. And the barriers that break down a listening ear. What produces a consciousness of separation? What stands in the way? So, thank you, everybody. Thank you, everybody out there. We're going to be starting tomorrow at 10? Yeah, 10 a.m. for everybody out there. We'll see you tomorrow. 9:30. 9:30 tomorrow is our friend and wonderful Gary Sigler. So you don't want to miss it. Okay? All right. Thank you.